This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Judy Dempsey, a senior scholar for the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, is in Berlin observing the events of these last days along the NATO frontier. That's right. We're dealing now with a story that does not have one version. I will tell the version of the word provocation. Initially, there were 19 or 20 drones crossing into Polish airspace from Belarus, we're told. Many were shot down. Some were, what you'd have to say, decoys made out of styrofoam. At least one or more had long-range tanks on them, so that mitigated the explanation. At first, it was an accident of war. Following that, there was an incident, unclear at this point, about high-performance warplanes called MiG-31s that are not the freshest versions, but certainly are capable of carrying a hypersonic missile with a nuclear warhead. I note that. It's not the best plane they have, but it is capable. They were seen, we're told, in the airspace of Estonia. Following that, Poland scrambled some of its good jets, F-16s, during a Russian air attack on Ukraine. Then there has been an incident, we're told, at the Copenhagen airport of a drone, unknown origin, unknown master, in the area. There have been complaints repeatedly to Russia to stop the provocations or to halt the crossing into NATO airspace. In midst of all this, last week, there was a meeting, emergency meeting, called by Poland in Brussels, the headquarters of NATO, called an Article 4 meeting, which has happened very rarely over the nearly 80 years of NATO's existence. I stopped the summary there because it is clear there is no accident here. There is a intelligence probing. You will recall that it is Vladimir Putin's opinion that this is a war between the Russian Federation and its allies and NATO, not Ukraine. Judy, a very good evening to you. You have observed some or all of these events in Berlin. How has the news treated them? How has Herr Merz treated them? And especially I'm interested in Boris Pistorius, your very capable and well-spoken defense minister. Good evening to you, Judy.
Good evening, John, and thank you for having me on your show. Well, I've got to say that Chancellor Merz has nothing on his plate, actually, with the big budget coming up, with trying to reform the railway system, make them more efficient, trying to find money to improve the infrastructure. So this is a chancellor who's torn between dealing with very big domestic issues, especially housing issue and education, on the one hand, and the foreign policy areas, especially the recognition by France of a Palestinian state and several other EU member states. And then he has to deal with all the provocations, as you call them, Russia going into Estonian airspace and Polish airspace, and now Denmark. Denmark is particularly interesting, and Germany has a very close relationship with Denmark. There are borders, but Denmark is actually chairing the European Union presidency at the moment, and Denmark has a top-notch defense and strategic infrastructure. And behind the scenes, they're really helping train and supply Ukraine. So this was really Russia getting at Denmark. They've had very bad relations over the past 15 years. And Russia is now testing the resolve of Denmark, which is a very important NATO and EU member. And Germany's taking a very close eye on all of these reactions.
From Moscow's point of view, they're keen on knowing how the powers of the EU, powers of NATO, are reacting. So far, and I summarize, Britain, its new foreign minister, has been extremely aggressive and belligerent, saying, "You will stop this." I believe Ms. Cooper is the new minister of defense. At the same time, at the UN, there are remarks by a deputy Russian diplomat at the gathering in New York, saying this is theater of the absurd. There have been other remarks that suggest they're paying attention but do not regard it as profound, these probes. The question now is, where does Europe place itself in the aggression against it, not Ukraine, against Europe? Is it recognized as aggression? Is it seen as, oh, Vladimir Putin is just entertaining his domestic audience to keep them interested? How is there an explanation at all offered the public?
Well, you can only read, the statements coming out of the Kremlin and the foreign ministry, and sort of trying to play it down. But this is certainly testing NATO's defences. But I think it's much more important. Much more important is that they're testing how the US will react. And so far, President Trump is sort of downplaying it. He barely reacted when the drones went into Polish airspace. And there were six or eight drones. I mean, that's quite a lot. And to fly over from Belarus, and Belarus clearly was in connivance with this as well, this neighbours with Poland. But the reaction from the White House has been incredibly disappointing for the European allies inside NATO. So to answer your question, we have spoken about this before. The European members of the NATO alliance really must quickly get together and start defending themselves in a much more robust way. We keep hearing what they should do, but somehow they're still not jolted out of a kind of military and strategic complacency. I don't know if this will do it. One hopes so, because European security has been at stake ever since Russia invaded Ukraine first back in 2014, and particularly in 2022.
What is the opinion of the United States and NATO now? I know from here it is difficult to have one version of how the Trump administration regards NATO. Sometimes it is in leadership. Sometimes it is not. Mostly it is not these days. Is there an opinion in Berlin, let's be very specific, of American leadership in NATO, whether it exists or not?
There's an opinion in Berlin which is shared by the other capitals, and it's a very profoundly worrying perception of the American commitment to NATO. That when there was the NATO summit, President Trump was being sort of polite, but the European allies were fawning to him. But they don't trust him anymore, and they see failed promises about sanctions, failed promises about ending the war, failed promises about increasing commitment to NATO, failed promises about supporting the allies. And there's a growing sense, not of cynicism, but actually, maybe it's not a bad thing, realism, that actually the dice has turned in a different way. And yes, the Europeans are still dependent on the United States for security, but let us hope that the dice will face the other way and say to the Europeans, this is your turn now to actually really speed up ways to defend yourselves against Russia, given the actual kind of quasi-complacency or indifference or oh, so whatness by the Trump administration towards NATO and the Russian incursions on NATO. On NATO territory. And NATO territory is, I suppose, constitutionally, American territory, because we're all part of the same alliance.
It occurs to me, listening to your recitation, Judy, that Europe has treated the Ukraine story as if it was a failed country and they have to support it at the OECD or the IMF. So they keep pouring money or promises into Ukraine, hoping that the economy will balance itself. I do not hear the scale of fear that is necessary to fight a war, that Russia winning in Ukraine does not mean Russia will stop in its aggression. There are the Baltic states, there are Poland. I'm sure that the school children are all aware of the history there. I don't know that the rest of the EU is paying attention. But have I used the correct metaphor? They're treating this as a bailout of a sovereign state and not as a defense of themselves?
It's a very complicated question. The Europeans are, most of the Europeans, especially the Nordic and the Central Europeans in Paris and Germany and Italy, actually, are right behind Ukraine. They're not giving them the defense capabilities that they need, but they are actually providing know-how and other skills and military elements to help Ukraine, whether it's to win the war or not, who knows? But at the moment, the consensus is that Russia cannot be allowed to actually conquer Ukraine, and this is what Russia wants. And the Europeans know the danger of this because this is only the beginning of a much longer trend of reconquering parts of Europe that gained their independence after the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991.
The OECD is out, and I mention this because economies are vital to the credibility of governments. The OECD is out of with estimates of next year and going forward, this year and next year. And they're disappointing. They've lowered everybody's, except I think China was bumped up a 4 to 4 point, something in the fours. Very disappointing for China, but bumped up a little bit. I noted that Germany is under one. Is that something that Herr Merz has prepared Germany for? The U.S. is not that much better, but it's the best of all the OECD countries. Is Germany being prepared for another disappointing year, this year and next?
Well, this Organization for the Economic Cooperation Development Countries is a kind of rich club in many ways, as The Economist likes to call it. But I think there is a feeling across most EU member states that the economy is not functioning as well as it should, that there's a huge shortage of labor. Populism is playing into this element too, because it's holding back fundamental reforms, pension reforms, social welfare reforms, infrastructure reforms, education reforms. And so several EU leaders across the EU member states have to find ways to spur growth on the one hand, and on the other hand, find ways to keep the populace and the far right at bay. And essentially, if they want to do the second, keep them at bay, the first has to be delivered rather quickly to actually take away the sails of the far right and the populist movements.
The United Nations is gathering in New York. When we come back, the United Nations and Israel.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.